This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you want to learn how to steal customer credit card information from major retailers so you can buy anything you want?
Well, we can't help you with that. But among the many IT problems we solve, Barracuda's award-winning firewalls prevent hackers from taking your valuable data to the bank. Reclaim your network, like 150,000 other businesses have. To learn more about protecting customer data and your reputation, visit barracuda.com/firewalls.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
No politics here. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Monday, October 19. Welcome aboard. Here's what's up this hour.
Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says her testimony before the House Benghazi Committee Thursday is politically motivated. The chairman of the panel argues why it's not.
President Obama's options, if there's a breach to the debt limit, may be unconstitutional.
In sports, the Mets take the first two games from the Cubs in the National League Championship Series. Meanwhile, it's Kansas City at Toronto for Game 3 of the ALCS tonight.
And the state that may offer a window into how the future of U.S. politics will look.
In a state like this, there's a movement towards the middle, always, and they actually managed to get things done, and it's a very important swing state in presidential politics, and these millennials, who of course are the future of our electorate, aren't as moved by some of these edge issues as they used to be.
Nina Burley at Newsweek has a story called God, Guns, and Ganja. She shares it in about 25 minutes. Israeli authorities say a Palestinian gunman went on a shooting rampage at the central bus station in the southern Israeli city of Beersheba yesterday, killing a soldier and wounding 11 others. Police said the attacker was shot dead after a gun battle. A number of the wounded were police officers. Hospital officials said two people were in critical condition. 42 Palestinians and 8 Israelis have died in the recent violence. Secretary of State John Kerry, meanwhile, will be meeting with Middle East leaders at the end of the week.
We have a longstanding, extremely close, very important relationship with respect to Israel's security, and security will be front and center in our discussion.
The Palestinians dead this month include attackers wielding knives and protesters shot by Israeli forces during violent demonstrations. Israelis have been killed in random attacks in the streets or on buses. Yesterday, Israel put up a short concrete barrier along a street that borders a Palestinian neighborhood and a Jewish neighborhood. The wall is intended to stop gas bombs and other missiles being thrown at the Jewish apartments. Republican presidential candidate Jeb Bush is pushing back against comments from rival Donald Trump, who said Mr. Bush's brother, former President George Bush, shared some blame for the 9/11 attacks.
I'm not blaming George Bush, but I don't want Jeb Bush to say my brother kept us safe, because September 11th was one of the worst days in the history of this country.
He was on Fox News Sunday. On CNN's State of the Union, Mr. Bush said, look, my brother responded to a crisis, and he did it as you would hope a president would do.
Across the spectrum of foreign policy, Mr. Trump talks about things that as though he's still on The Apprentice. I mean, literally, talking about Syria, saying ISIS should take out Assad, then Russia should take out ISIS, as though it was some kind of board game.
Mr. Trump added that his own tough stance on illegal immigration would have made it difficult for the attacks to have been carried out, saying, quote, I doubt that those people would have been in the country. The 19 hijackers in the attacks, as you'll recall, all entered the U.S. legally on temporary visas, although a 9/11 commission report criticized flaws in the system that handled their applications. Mr. Bush likened Mr. Trump's comments to blaming President Franklin Roosevelt for the World War II attack on Pearl Harbor. 10 minutes now after the hour. How about this for a difficult spot? As you may have heard, the Treasury is scheduled to run out of borrowed money in early November. In the event of a debt limit breach, President Obama would be forced to do one of three things, each one of them illegal and perhaps even unconstitutional. That's the word from Gregory Corti, White House reporter at USA Today, who's been speaking with legal scholars. He joins us now on the T-Mobile hotline. Greg, what are you hearing?
you know, you've heard of a dilemma where you have two mutually exclusive choices and you can't do both. Here, the president, Congress is putting the president in a position where he's got to do one of three things if we get to a debt limit breach. He's got to either raise taxes, which he can't do without Congress. He's either got to ignore the debt limit, which Congress doesn't want him to do, or he's got to cut spending. There's a law called the Impoundment Act that was signed in 1974 in the Nixon administration that says the president can't cut spending by himself.
Wow.
If the Congress appropriates money to the president, he's got to spend it. So there you have three mutually exclusive dictates to the president, and he's got to violate one of those. And so the question is, which one is the least unconstitutional of those three unconstitutional choices the president would have if we breached the debt limit?
Wow. All right. So that's a big if, obviously. But has the White House indicated what it might do in that case?
Well, no. I mean, the White House has maintained, and the Treasury Department have maintained through every debt crisis, that there is no contingency plan. They can't prioritize payments. They can't, for example, say, well, Social Security beneficiaries would get their checks, but defense contractors wouldn't. They said their systems are not set up to pay one vendor over another. A bill comes in and they pay it. They say they can't prioritize bondholders. There have been a number of proposals in Congress that would make sure that the debt, that the bondholders would still get paid, but all other government spending would be frozen. The Treasury Department says that's not practical. They don't believe that's legal, first of all, and secondly, they don't distinguish between, you know, debt obligations and, and other spending obligations to the government. But they also just say, practically speaking, they wouldn't be able to implement that. Their systems aren't set up for it. And the White House says, you know, that they have not conducted any sort of constitutional analysis of this. They're confident that Congress will do the right thing, as they've always done 100 times since the debt limit was first instituted a century ago, and raise the debt limit.
We're speaking with Gregory Cordy, White House reporter at USA Today. His piece is called Obama's Options in Debt Limit Breach May All Be Unconstitutional. Is there any reason to believe that this time might be different?
Well, you know, we're in a remarkably different political environment, most notably because we don't know who the speaker is going to be. And the whole chaos over the speaker election is driven largely by this debt limit issue. There are a faction of Republicans in the House Freedom Caucus who believe that Speaker Boehner has been far too accommodating on issues of spending and debt to the White House, and want him to draw a more forceful negotiating line. The White House says, President Obama has said categorically, he will not negotiate on this. This is non-negotiable. Congress must pass a clean debt limit increase or else.
How about that? So do you expect we're going down to the wire, or will drama be avoided?
Well, you know, there's a third solution, and that is that Congress is very good at, and that is punting. The other thing on the calendar is that we have a short-term spending bill that President Obama signed last month to get us through December 12th, I think it is, and that's going to have to be renewed to full fiscal year 2016 appropriations. So it might make sense to consider the debt limit and the spending bill in tandem, and Congress may punt for a few weeks to give them a chance to do that.
It's Gregory Cordy, White House reporter at USA Today. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You always want to look great, but don't have the time or the patience to go shopping. With Trunk Club, you never have to set foot in the mall again. Trunk Club takes the hassle out of shopping by shipping you a trunk of clothes that fit perfectly and make you look like $1 million with all the new fall styles. At trunkclub.com/morning, all you have to do is answer simple questions about your style, preferences, and size, and then you are assigned an expert stylist. They curate clothes from the best premium brands, and you approve what you like. Just like that, a trunk arrives on your doorstep filled with hand-picked clothes that are perfect for you. Try them on, keep what you like, and easily return what you don't in their prepaid trunk. This is not a subscription service. You only pay for the clothes you keep. No hidden charges, just great clothes. And right now, their entire styling service is free. Even the shipping. You only pay for the clothes you keep. To take advantage, go to trunkclub.com/morning. One more time, that's trunkclub.com/morning for a trunk filled with clothes you'll love wearing. Glad you're with us. Good Monday morning. The head of the congressional investigation into the Benghazi attack says he's not targeting Democratic presidential frontrunner Hillary Clinton. and such talks hurt the inquiry. Mrs. Clinton, as you know, was Secretary of State in September 2012 when U.S. diplomatic outposts in Benghazi, Libya were attacked, killing four Americans, including Ambassador Christopher Stevens. Democrats have said the Republican-controlled committee is more interested in damaging Mrs. Clinton's reputation than uncovering the truth about that deadly night. Mrs. Clinton echoed that yesterday on CNN's State of the Union.
Other committees of the Congress, standing committees with very experienced members and staff, have all looked into this and basically just rejected the conspiracy theories that are still floating out there in some circles.
But the committee's chairman, Congressman Trey Gowdy of South Carolina, who's a former prosecutor, said yesterday he's focused on finding out what security failures led to the incident, not on Mrs. Clinton.
There's more information on our military preparedness and our inability slash ability to respond. Some of that information I'm not able to give you publicly. I'll just tell you this. We have new information on all three tranches of Libya that have nothing to do with this, with Secretary Clinton.
Mrs. Clinton is due to testify before the committee this Thursday, by the way. The committee questioned her senior aide, Huma Abedin, for 6 hours in a closed session on Friday. 21 minutes after the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Jordan Secretary of State John Kerry is calling on Israeli and Palestinian leaders to take urgent action to end the current violence in Israel and the West Bank. Kerry says he'll be working with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and Palestinian President Abbas to find steps that could help reduce tensions.
We want to see calm restored, and we want to see the violence stop. And I think everybody in Israel and in the region would like to see both of those things happen.
Kerry's meeting with both leaders later in the week. Canadian voters cast their ballots today to decide whether to extend Conservative leader Stephen Harper's near decade in power or return Canada to its more liberal roots. Prime Minister Stephen Harper is trailing Liberal leader Justin Trudeau, the son of late Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, in the polls. It was only supposed to be a gunfight reenactment involving blanks, but somehow two people ended up getting hit with bullets yesterday in the Old West town of Tombstone, Arizona. The shooting occurred as two actors in the Tombstone Vigilante Group engaged in a standoff as they reenacted an episode from the town made famous by the OK Corral. Authorities inspected the weapon and found it was filled with live rounds prior to the skit. Hundreds of migrants spent the night in rain and cold at Croatia's border after being refused entry into Slovenia. Croatian police let some 1,800 migrants off a train at the border, but Slovenian police were deployed and put up fences to prevent a mass entry. Authorities in Slovenia are allowing people in, but only in small groups, and Croatian police are on the other side trying to prevent the migrants from turning back. And a star-studded lineup of comedians, including Chris Rock, George Lopez, and Kathy Griffin, honored Eddie Murphy as an American icon. The Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington presented the comedian with the Mark Twain Prize, the nation's top prize for humor. The tribute will be broadcast on November 23rd on PBS.
Remember listening to that Eddie Murphy comedy album growing up. I don't know when that came out, in the 80s?
Yeah, that was
maybe
a long time ago.
The barbecue and the shoe-throwing mother and all that stuff. Oh, man, I still laugh about that. It's 23 minutes after the hour on this morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. This week, by the way, is known as National Teen Driver Safety Week. Each year, motor vehicle crashes claim the lives of 8 out of every 100,000 teens, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. If you haven't had the talk with your teen driver, get on it. If you've had the talk, a second one couldn't hurt. More from Kate Carr, president and CEO of Safe Kids Worldwide. Kate, how is it that some still don't wear a seatbelt?
Well, it's mind-boggling to me, particularly because we do so well getting kids into car seats from the time that they're born and taking that first ride. So we have to really emphasize the importance that that seatbelt could save your life. And certainly, if we think about the other good behaviors that we want to emphasize, not being a distracted driver, so not texting, not looking out the window, not being distracted by your friends or music that you have playing too loud, not speeding, not driving impaired. These are important messages to get to our teens. And I don't like to talk a lot about don't. We want to emphasize the do things. Do be a safe driver. And so there's far too many lives that are needlessly lost and families deprived of loved ones.
Is driving a car, is that the number one killer of teenagers in America?
It is.
Death by auto?
It is, yeah. Yes. A car crash is the leading killer of our teens. And that's a ridiculously high number. There are about 8,000 lives that are lost to a preventable injury, and 2,500 of them are teens in cars.
We're speaking with Kate Carr, President and CEO of Safe Kids Worldwide. We're talking about keeping teen drivers safer behind the wheel. You talked about the do's before, and I know that in one of the notes here, it talks about helping kids to understand that they have to speak up if they feel unsafe. How do you have that conversation with your kid?
It's a really important conversation to have, and I've had it with my three kids, that if you are a passenger, you want to make sure that everybody who's in that vehicle is wearing their seatbelt. You want to make sure that the driver isn't distracted. And if you're concerned, either speak up and say, look, I need you to slow down, or I need you not to text while driving. I'll do that text for you so that you don't have to do it. And just, if you're uncomfortable, find a way to get out of that car and call me. I'll come pick you up. And if every parent can reinforce that, and I'm sure that, you know, we all lead busy lives, but we want our kids to be safe. So we want to give them the tools that they need to have that conversation and say, hey, it's okay. It's okay to speak up. Better to speak up than to be involved in a car crash.
Yeah. Thanks, Kate. Kate Carr, President and CEO of Safe Kids Worldwide. By the way, if you miss a day, don't forget you can hear podcasts of the program on our website, which is thismorningwithgordondeal.com. Also on apps like TuneIn, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and iTunes. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Men, if you're like me, you appreciate the feeling of a clean, smooth shave from a quality blade. The sort of shave that cuts clean, without the burn. So why are you messing around with generic razors that cost $32 for an 8-pack, when you can shave with Harry's high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price? And if saving money and a clean shave isn't incentive enough, Harry's will give you their starter set, complete with a razor, three of their world-famous blades, and shaving cream for just $15. And shipping is always free. We'll also give you $5 off your first order. Our way of saying thank you for trying us. How are we able to save you all this money and still give you the best shave you'll ever enjoy? By owning the factory that manufactures them. That's how. So go to Harry's.com right now and enter code 4000 at checkout. That's Harry's.com, code 4000.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Good Monday morning, October 19. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: more deadly violence in Israel, Bush and Trump in a war of words over 9/11. An inmate at a Minnesota hospital has killed the deputy who was monitoring him, and the suspect later died. New drone rules from the FAA due today. American astronaut Scott Kelly with a new record, 383 total days in space and counting. His girlfriend will see him next March. It's part of an experiment on the human body he's doing. And why Japanese people turning 100 is getting to be old news. That story in about 20 minutes. Ever wonder which direction the country is headed politically? If so, Nina Burley at Newsweek says, look at Colorado. Home to gun huggers and pot smokers, pro-lifers and atheists, but running for the middle ground. Nina, what's up here?
In a state like this, there's a movement towards the middle, always, and they actually managed to get things done, and it's a very important swing state in presidential politics. They have a lot of millennials there, a lot of young, there's a tech alley in Denver, a lot of prosperity from, it's a growing city, and a lot of young people are coming there, and these millennials, who of course are the future of our electorate, aren't as moved by some of these edge issues as they used to be, as their fathers and grandparents were.
Okay.
So they're very libertarian in some ways.
Yeah.
They're you know, obviously the single women are very pro Planned Parenthood. They're not moved by the abortion issues. But you have that, and you know you have let me have my gun. It's very libertarian.
but it's all sort of moving towards the middle.
To your point there, there was a line in your story that said issue-driven groups manipulate some blocks of voters, but the state is filling up with unaligned millennials. What does that mean for the future of politics there?
Well, what it means is that the middle is where it's at, and you know, these edge issues don't work on the millennials. The millennials are more interested in being left alone, having a certain lifestyle. It probably means that the pot issue is there to stay.
Yeah.
They're not going to reverse that. It probably means that it leans a little bit to the blue side. But then again, it's very, it's a very hard fought, place. And, you know, the junior senator, Michael Bennett, was, he squeaked by, and he's a Democrat. He squeaked by in a year where Republicans were taking a lot of seats across the country.
Okay.
He squeaked in. So it means that it maybe is moving blue. It's definitely a purple state. I think that's what they call it. It goes back and forth, but it is moving blue. And it's one of the reasons why Hillary Clinton, with all her team of strategists, chose Colorado to be one of the states that she would campaign in after the first primary states.
Yeah.
So they recognize the importance of this place. It's a center. It's a geographical center of the United States, and it holds within it elements that are true nationally. And so it's a very interesting place politically to look at.
Yeah. We're speaking with Nina Burley, national politics correspondent at Newsweek. Her piece is called God, Guns, and Gotcha, looking at the politics of Colorado. Are there states that are similar to Colorado right now?
All states have some edges to them, right? I mean, some are, you know, they're always going to be red, and some are going to always be blue, like Massachusetts, although they've sent Republicans to the Senate. I would say, maybe states that have rural and urban areas, like my home state of Illinois, perhaps in some way, might be like that. But I haven't studied a lot of the other states. I mean, there are other swing states in the United States, and that is, those swing states would have similarities, but they're not twinned up. But I think in general, the issues of guns and reproductive rights and religion in politics, these issues are play out in Colorado in a way that is kind of a bellwether for the future of these types of issues in the United States in general.
Thanks, Nina. Nina Burley at Newsweek. 21 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us on this Monday morning. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, anybody who turned off the Michigan State-Michigan game a minute or two early on Saturday probably thought the Wolverines had wrapped up a win, but as we saw, the game isn't over until the final whistle blows. Michigan State pulled out an unbelievable 27-23 victory when the Michigan punter was unable to handle a long snap and fumbled it at his own 38-yard line on the final play of the game. Then the Spartans' Jalen Watts-Jackson was in position to grab the football and run to the end zone for a walk-off touchdown. That wild ending led to an unfortunate moment for one Michigan reporter, who apparently didn't stay till the end of the game. After the game, Jamal Spencer of Grand Rapids WZZM 13 was reporting from outside the Big House.
Michigan coming up with a crucial stop, and they were able to run out the clock. People are spilling out of Michigan Stadium into the streets of Ann Arbor celebrating as the Paul Bunyan Trophy is back in Ann Arbor for the first time since 2012.
Whoops. Now, to his credit, Spencer did own up to the mistake, and he didn't try to blame it on technical issues or throw anybody under the bus. After Deadspin picked up on his gaffe and he started to get some social media flack, he tweeted, quote, "Not the first time I've made a mistake in my career, and it won't be the last. Gotta take the bad with the good."
Well said.
Yes.
That's the same thing here. Mistakes are made sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're not perfect.
Yeah, I mean, you've reported on sports before. I mean, and I have as well. Mistakes mistakes like that do happen from time to time. Not necessarily in such high-profile situations like that.
But it is just sports after
all. Yes, it is. Yes.
Did you happen to see that? I didn't see it live.
But I didn't see it live either,
Was on at a restaurant I was at, and I couldn't figure out what was happening because my eyes aren't that good. I couldn't see the TV. And I thought, when I read about it and watched it afterwards, I thought, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, that type of game?
Facepalm,
right.
Unbelievable.
And by the way, one of the favorite moments has to be the Michigan State radio call.
Oh, yeah.
Where the color analyst just loses his mind.
Bad snap. Fouled. Scooped up. Here come the Spartans. Down the sidelines. Racing into the end zone.
Are you kidding me?
Going into the end zone is Jalen.
Oh, my God.
Watts. Jackson. Touchdown, MSU.
Touchdown.
there are like some noises he makes.
Yeah.
Then yells of glory. And then at the end, touchdown.
And that might be him clapping in the background
I think. I think what he did was, I think he put the headphones down, his headset down, cheered wildly, then quickly threw them back on to just announce at the end, touchdown.
Yes, the no cheering in the press box rule just completely went out the window. But I love those kind of calls,
though.
You know, in college football especially, that's always great. And Gordon, getting a ticket from police in one Massachusetts town isn't necessarily a bad thing. Concord's police department says it plans to issue up to 200 citations for good behavior. That could include such things as wearing a bicycle helmet or seatbelt, yielding to pedestrians at a crosswalk, or looking both ways before crossing a street. Police Chief Joseph O'Connor says it's a lighthearted way to connect positively with the community. Instead of a fine or a court appearance, these citations can be redeemed for two scoops of ice cream at Reasons to Be Cheerful, a local dessert cafe. The owner of the restaurant agreed to donate the ice cream.
Okay. I like that, generally speaking.
Right.
But, you know, it opens the door to a smart aleck response when you get pulled over.
Right.
Because normally, police officer says, do you know why I pulled you over?
Right.
And now you can say, to give me some ice cream? Right. I mean, that's kind of, I think, where this is going for the smart Alex.
Yeah. Could change expectations a little bit. Yeah. Could make for some awkward moments for sure.
Thank you, Mike. It's 13 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Getting your mailing and shipping done can seem like a no-win situation. First, going to the post office takes up valuable time, and leasing a postage meter is expensive with multi-year commitments and hidden fees. Luckily, there's a better way. Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk using your own computer and printer. Even get special postage discounts you can't find at the post office. Plus, Stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter at just a fraction of the cost. You can save at least 50% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to the post office. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com. Enter Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Time now for a retirement update, and it's brought to you by TIAA CREF. Learn more at TIAA.org. You've heard that crossword puzzles can keep your mind sharp as you get older, but other activities, including those between the sheets, might be more fun. A guest writer for the Wall Street Journal has a list. Number one, find your inner artist. MRI tests showed that recent retirees who took drawing or painting classes improved connectivity between regions of the brain. Number two, a recent study found people ages 55 to 70 who practiced yoga 3 times a week were speedier and more accurate in cognitive tasks. Number three, watch movies in 3D. They can be more physiologically stimulating, increasing heart rate and blood flow to the brain. Number four, drink cocoa. Flavanols, which are compounds also found in red wine and tea, help increase blood flow to the brain. Number five, sing. People who belted out show tunes 3 times a week for 4 months made big improvements on tests of memory and other mental abilities. And finally, rev up your sex life. At least in rats, regular sexual activity increased the formation of new brain cells. It's 8 minutes now before the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Passport and a migrant shot by an Israeli security guard and then attacked by bystanders who mistook him for an assailant in a deadly bus station attack has died of his wounds. The mistaken shooting of the migrant reflects the shattered nerves among Israelis after months of seemingly random lone wolf attacks by Palestinians. Yesterday, an Arab attacker armed with a gun and a knife opened fire in a bus station, killing an Israeli soldier and wounding 10 people. Republican presidential candidate Jeb Bush transitioned from defense to offense after criticism from rival Donald Trump that his brother, former President George W. Bush, carried some blame for 9/11.
He united the country, he organized our country, and he kept us safe. And there's no denying that. The great majority of Americans believe that, and I don't know why he keeps bringing this up.
Bush told CNN Trump's comments on the September 11th attacks call his credibility into question. The federal government today will announce a new plan requiring anyone buying a drone to register the device with the Transportation Department. The move comes amid growing concerns about close calls between unmanned drones and aircraft flying into and out of some of the nation's biggest airports. Some Southern California roads that were buried in tons of mud during flash flooding finally reopened. Crews managed to pull dozens of stranded cars and trucks free using more than 40 bulldozers, dump trucks, and other heavy equipment, working through an estimated 200,000 cubic yards of mud. At least one person is being treated at an Arizona hospital after being shot with real bullets during a gunfight reenactment in the Old West town of Tombstone. The skit was supposed to involve blanks, but one of the actor's guns fired live rounds during the skit. The actor underwent surgery to remove a bullet while other rounds struck a bystander and nearby businesses. And Goosebumps scared off its competition to claim the top spot at the box office over the weekend. The family-friendly horror movie starring Jack Black earned $23.5 million. Goosebumps managed to beat The Martian by a hair, pushing Ridley Scott's space adventure to the second place spot.
You didn't see a movie over the weekend, did you?
A little football to watch.
I know. I was going to say.
Good time.
How about the emotional swings of Rutgers knocking off Indiana?
After getting down 52-27, winning on the last play of the game, it wasn't just Michigan State that came back.
Can I make an admission?
You didn't see it.
I turned it off.
Oh, you gave up?
Well, this is
never
pathetic.
Give up.
We're getting crushed by Indiana. We look awful.
Didn't Jim Valvano teach you anything? Come on, have faith.
Well said. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. Well, Japan has found a way to trim government costs. It's going to stop spending so much money recognizing people who turn 100. Typically, people who reach the century mark get a small, shallow bowl from the prime minister's office made of silver, and it's intended for a ceremonial sip of sake. But Japan's health ministry, which administers the commendation program, has decided to slash its budget for it. To adjust, the government may begin making the bowls out of a mix of copper, nickel, and zinc with a silver finish. When the government-issued silver bowls made their debut in 1963, Japan had 153 people aged 100 or older. But now there are a lot more of them to toast. About 30,000 Japanese turn 100 every year. By 2050, the government projects there will be about 680,000 citizens at or above a century. How do they do it? A lot of low-fat meals consisting of rice, fish, veggies, and beans. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Hey, thanks for listening. If you love our show, we'd love it if you took a few minutes to give us a review on iTunes. And while you're at it, make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the handle @ThisMorningShow.